Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A new book called Jerome Robbins by Himself chronicles legendary director-choreographer through selections of his journals, notes, letters. Robbins gave new form to the Broadway musical. He shaped West Side Story, Fiddler on the Roof, and other classics. He also spent decades creating groundbreaking choreography for the New York City Ballet. The book, which is edited with commentary by my guest, Amanda Vail, draws from the prolific Robbins archives and includes some startling selections from his letters and diaries. For example, this passage. He writes to his friend Len. That would be Leonard Bernstein. "Len, it was really wonderful concert tonight. I'd never heard you really play anything but Fancy in Town, and the Bach was quite an exciting experience. Then the Stravinsky was new to me, and God, what an experience! Bravo is for that alone. I rode along the Don Juan nicely, anticipating the variations, and then I sat and chuckled and gurgled and beamed and nodded and emphasized and had a wonderful time. They sounded marvelously, and the only complaint was a little something on the encore of Harold's dance, trying to pick him keeping up with it, but it sounded wonderfully unsaddled by dancers. So thank you for a very special evening of music. Good luck and continuous success, Jerry." The letters are annotated by Vail, by the way, who is uniquely qualified to provide context. She wrote a 675-page biography, Somewhere, the Life of Jerome Robbins. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Allison. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's really fun to read the letters with your annotations, because I didn't let our listeners know there are little asterisks throughout this letter that you fill us in on some of the backstory and what this line might have meant and what that line might have meant. I'm curious, when did you learn that Jerome Robbins had such a prolific that he was a prolific journal keeper and letter writer?
Well, actually, it was when I started writing the biography, which I thought was going to be short work, because I thought, this guy, he's a choreographer, he's a dancer, he's a director. This is all motion. You know, he's not going to have an archive. He's not going to write stuff. And I went into his papers, which I thought, maybe there'll be some revealing snippets in here. And there were what turned out to be 200 linear feet of paper. That is a hell of a lot of paper. And they were the most extraordinary variety of material, and so candid and so expressive of a really Protean kind of personality. He had so many interests and so many passions, and it was eye-opening, and I could never do justice to all of that in a biography, because you can't. You have to write a narrative, mm-hmm. and you have to put these gems into that context, but you can't just let him talk the whole time. That's not the point. You're supposed to be talking.
Right.
So this was in a way that this always bothered me. I thought, you know, I want him to be able to step up
and speak for himself.
Yeah.
So is there something different that you notice in the way that he communicated through his written word versus the way he communicated with people one-on-one?
Well, I can't speak to that directly, because I personally never spoke to him one-on-one, although we did have a very brief correspondence just before he died, when I was seeking to do a profile of him for Vanity Fair. And he had agreed to let me interview him, and then he died, and I couldn't do it. But
some people have described him as sort of non-communicative. He could be very brusque one-on-one.
And people would say there were two kind of raps on him. One of them was Jerry's inarticulate words were Jerry's enemy, said Hal Prince to me in an interview. And I thought, I'm not sure when I'd read all the stuff that he had written, I thought, I'm not sure I agree with that. And the other thing that people thought, there's a story people always tell about Robbins. Everybody hated him so much, they say, that when he was directing a sequence in fill in name of show here, because everybody, it's about a different mm-hmm. show depending on which person you talk to. He was directing them and he backed off the stage and fell into the orchestra pit, and nobody stopped him because they all hated him so much. And I always feel that story says more about the person who tells it than about him. He was, as you said, however, a perfectionist. "I wear the badge proudly," he said. And he was very, very grouchy when he didn't get the results that he wanted, in part because he felt maybe he hadn't told them what it was that he wanted very clearly. But the thing that is so remarkable about his choreography that people always remark about is its humanity, that his choreography is about people. It's about people connecting. And how could that person who could do that be that other person that would fall off the stage backwards and no one would care? You know,
Or who would write a letter to his friend Len saying what a great evening he had.
Yeah, there you are. And would be so attentive to all the nuances of the music, which is another thing that I discovered as I did all of this, was how much of an autodidact he was. He was, and how deeply he went into culture. He knew so much about music, so much about art, so much about poetry, so much about literature, which you would never have expected. And it crops up in these letters and diaries and notes.
My guest, Amanda Vale, she edited Jerome Robbins by himself. There are letters from when he was a little boy in here as well. There's one from June 1924. He's aboard the White Star Line. He says, "Dear Daddy, how are you? We are in the middle of the ocean. I am not seasick. Every night we have ice cream." From Jerry. He was originally born Jerry Rabinowitz.
Yes, he was. Jerome Wilson
Rabinowitz. When did the name change come and why?
Well, the name change was kind of in the wings a lot. His family, there were people in his family who were in vaudeville, and they had often used the name Robbins as a stage name because that was what a lot of Americans did at that time. And when he was dancing in his very, very earliest career, he had got an apprenticeship with a major experimental modern dance choreographer called Senya Gluck Sandor, who was actually born Sammy Glick in the Bronx. And Sandor said to Robbins, "You got to change your name. You can't be Jerome Rabinowitz, and you got to have something that's more Anglo." And as Robin said, well, he'd done a fine nose job on his own name too, so I guess I'd better follow along. And he changed it to Robbins, which was the one.
This is Olivet on WNYC. My guest is Amanda Vale. We're talking about Jerome Robbins by himself. I'm curious about something in the book that I saw that it says, "Albia Cavan, Robbins' first girlfriend."
Yes.
So how long was he closeted? How much did he write about his sexual orientation?
That's such an interesting question. Because he was always, if not 100%, he was a gay man who occasionally was attracted to women. Let's put it that way. And this lasted, the occasional relationships with women went on through his life into the 1970s at least. And there's evidence of that in his papers. But his overwhelming preference was he was a gay man. And however, in the early parts of his career, this was, you know, career death for almost anybody. So that he kept that in the closet at that point. And only gradually, he brought home Nora Kay, with whom he had a fairly lengthy affair on and off for a while, and to whom he was actually engaged to be married. And he brought her home to meet the family. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, gradually this petered out and he realized he didn't have to do this anymore, and he didn't.
Part of his history, I think a lot of people know about, he was a member of the Communist Party, and he did reveal names of friends and people he worked with to the House on Un-American Activities Committee. What did you learn about this and his decision to do this through his own writings?
Well, I actually found something that I had never suspected existed. And I hadn't found it. No other biographer had found it. What happened was that in 1950, Robbins was going to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was a very big deal variety show in those days. It was the thing that everybody watched on Sunday night. And he and some other dancers were going to be on it, doing his own choreography. And then Sullivan discovered that he had been a communist. And Sullivan and a man called Ted Kirkpatrick, who was the editor-in-chief of an anti-red rag called Counterattack, dragged Robbins into Sullivan's office and basically held his feet in the fire. And they said, you need to fess up. You need to go straight. You need to name names. You need to go to the FBI. You need to do all of this. And I can't have you on my show until you do it. And Robbins is, for 3 years, Robbins tried to avoid naming names, tried to avoid really cooperating in any way. And ultimately, because of a number of different pressures, he did cave and he appeared. The thing that I had never seen, because Robbins did not write about this very much, certainly not directly, not to anyone. Letters that he wrote in 1953, right before he appeared to testify, mentioned nothing about it. Hmm. He wrote a memorandum to his file after he had seen Sullivan and Kirkpatrick, and he tucked it away. It has everything they said to him, everything he felt about it, and he stuck it in a file, presumably because he wanted to have it for legal protection if he ever needed to pull it out. It was never found because at some point when he was working on an autobiographical theater piece called The Papa Piece in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, he took it out and put it in among those papers to use as kind of an aide memoir, and it became buried in among duplicate scripts, which is where it is now in the New York Public Library. And I was looking for a variant of the script because I wanted to use it. There's a trial scene in this piece that I wanted to use to stand for his testimony at HUAC, because he didn't ever write about that episode. And I found this memorandum, which was just, mind-boggling to discover. So there it is.
My guest, Amanda Vail. The name of the book is Jerome Robbins by Himself, selections from his letters, journals, drawings, photographs, and an unfinished memoir. The drawings are really interesting. In the middle of the book, some of his, he's written, and there are like pressed flowers, and then there are scribblings of his own and collages. What can you tell us about his drawings and these interesting collages that you've...
Well, he was always an arty little boy, and he grew into an art-loving grown-up. And from the very, very beginning, he seemed to love collage. He made a book for his mother using his own poems and then cut images out of a book of Greek myths for children and pasted them into it. And as he grew older, and he would keep diaries, many of them were indeed collages. He would paste in wonderful images and tickets and programs and clippings, and then write his diary entries in between the whole thing. And then he would put watercolor wash over some of it. And in a way, when I came to do this book, I wanted to use that format. I thought, well, I'm going to make a collage. He liked collage. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a collage of his work. And I'm going to take a little bit of his letters, and I'll take his memoirs, and I'll take his diary entries, and I will put them in a chronological order, and they'll be kind of like a collage of his life, the way he would put it together.
I was going to ask, it's such an interesting way to put it together, and when you say it like that, I understand it, because there's one point in the intro you write about going through all of this, that that some of his letters were labeled in things like green filing cabinet on the end.
Yes.
That it wasn't an orderly collection of papers.
Certainly not when I first saw it. I mean, now, of course, it's been processed. It's in the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, and it is exquisitely conserved, and it is pretty logically arranged. At least it's as logically arranged as anybody could arrange something as eccentric as this collection.
Were there themes that emerged from his life, from his point of view about his life?
Oh, yeah. One of the first things that you see with him is his ambition. He had great ambition. Not ambition to be successful so much as ambition to be great. Ambition to have and taste and experience everything. There's a a little piece from the Papa piece that I put in which he's talking to his father, the character in the play that is based on himself, is talking to his father, and he says, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to travel here, I want to travel there, I want to read this book and do that book, and I want all of it. And his father says, you're making yourself mashugana. which I guess he understood. The other thing that comes out in it also is his incredible love for and care for and support of the people that he really loved. Letters to Tanaki LeClaire when she had polio, and she is in an iron lung in Denmark, where she has gotten polio, and he's trying to bring the whole world to her and writes everything about, oh, I saw this and I saw that and I saw this interesting thing that you would have liked. She's just trying to bring the world to her. It's just amazing. And there is also the incredible self-doubt about, am I good enough? Am I doing the right work? That's all there too.
The name of the book is Jerome Robbins By Himself, selections from his letters, journals, drawings, photographs, and an unfinished memoir. It was edited with great commentary as well by Amanda Vale. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to talk to you.
This is All of It on WNYC.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.